From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast in the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar pumps with March to the Yard. Nonetheless, closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up and a 16th to go. It's Curbon in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game, and Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Lediapolis Third, the others with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two in Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am indeed Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch. Happy to have you along with me for the next couple of hours as we cover a lot of ground here on the show. It is the 22nd day of June 2019, which means that we are just about at the midway point of the year, and thought it would be fun to spend some time looking back on the top moments so far here in 2019. So we'll do that with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, who will join me right around 8:40 Eastern time. Also going to be joined by Jay Pribman of the Daily Racing Forum at 9:40 Eastern. And then in between all of that, we're going to look ahead to next week's Queen's Plate at Woodbine. We will be there with all the coverage for you next Saturday. We'll be joined by Josie Carroll, who will be inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame in August. She, of course, will saddle two horses, including the likely favorite, Avies Flatter, in next Saturday's Queen's Plate, that race, the equivalent to the Kentucky Derby here in the United States. It is just for the Canadian breds, and those three-year-olds set to go to the post next Saturday. And, of course, as I said, we'll have the coverage for you here on the network. You'll hear the race, and you will hear this show, the Equine Forum, hosted live from Woodbine. 132 days, 5 hours, 34 minutes until the Breeders' Cup World Championships in November. And looking forward to the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the network. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to see a complete broadcast schedule. So many of you may be wondering why I haven't introduced the Pontiff of the Pick Four. Well, the Pontiff is making his way to New Jersey. He'll be there at Monmouth today for the United Nations and what is a really good card at Monmouth Park. So thought it would be appropriate to welcome in a special guest co-host. And to do that, yeah, there you go. Right on target. He is indeed the godfather, Tony Attiano from the Lexus store of Lexington. You know, I think, godfather, I think you're the only one that has your own music on the show.
Well, firstly, Mikey, I want to say buongiorno. And I'll have a Vino Rosso right here. You know, when you start talking about red wine to an Italian Maron, it's all over, folks. It's all over. And I really want to wish our big man, you know, the guy who went to Jersey this week. There's always a lot of bad blood if you're from New York originally and you start talking about Jersey. They probably have his body wrapped up right now already.
He's from California.
Yeah, he's really got the body wrapped.
You know, from what I understand, and this is only going by what I've seen on Jude's Twitter feed, I don't think he's actually in New Jersey yet. They left last night. According to his Twitter, they left last night. They flew from Cincinnati. Their flight was diverted to Detroit because of a lack of cabin pressure, which is never a good thing when you're up at 35,000 feet.
Oh, God.
They went to Detroit. We're supposed to get on a flight from Detroit to New Jersey last night. The flight was canceled, so they had to spend the night in Detroit and leave at 6 a.m. this morning. And as of about 6:30, when I was checking the Twitter feeds, I think Jude was still in Motown. I don't think he ever made it out.
Well, he might be there in some sort of a sewer. You never know. There's a lot of crime in Detroit. See, when you start talking, when you talk to New York Italians, you get a history course also. I hate to say that, folks, but you got to be careful.
Are you a New York Italian?
I'm a New York Italian.
Nobody could tell.
Well, a lot of people say, you know, I thought you would have an accent. And I had this young fellow at the hospital a few weeks ago. He said, I thought you would have an accent. You don't sound like you're from New York. Then I said to him, so what do you want? You want me to talk like that now so I can smack you on the side of the head? And the guy goes, I like that. That's what I thought.
Forget
about
it.
That's in New York. Yeah, that's what I said to him. Forget about it. Are you kidding here?
Yeah, believe me, people are going to think that we've gone to Italy or something here this morning on the program between you and the Big A when he joins
us at
8:40 Eastern time. A lot of things to cover here this morning. But let's set the stage here for a second, Godfather, because this has been something, the Godfather nickname or moniker, if you want to look at it like that, has been something that has been part of this program since the very beginning. I started on radio in 2003, and at that time, this was a one-hour program, and it wasn't even called Equine Forum at that point. It was a show that was being done by our good friend, the late Pete Coolis, who was my mentor and wonderful friend to both of us, and you and I sat down. Pete was there. You were at the old Lexus store out on Nicholasville Road. Yeah. And we came to you and we said, hey, what do you think of being part of this program and letting us talk about Lexus? You embraced the idea. You're a horse racing guy, first and foremost.
Definitely.
And that was a big part of it.
Hey, I walked hots at Belmont for Walter Kelly. I was 17 years old, and I thought I knew something about horses, a little something, you know. But let me tell you, that 5 weeks, 6 weeks in the summer that I did that, it changed my whole life. I mean, I saw a whole nother world. I saw the horse world. I saw the richest of the rich, the poorest of the poor, and they all communicated because of the animal. And the animal is treated royally, and I'm just a little PO'd over what's going on right now with the horse industry, with the animals on the West Coast. But there's so many people that give so much to these animals, and the animals give everything back, really.
Yeah.
But Coolis had a memory that was just unbelievable.
Yeah, incredible.
Unbelievable. And you were just starting out, you know, and Pete would come in, and, you know, he'd come in during the week sometimes and he'd say to me, what do you think of that kid, huh? And meaning you. So I said, he's doing terrific. What do you mean? He says, no, he's asking me so many questions. I said, hey, Pete, you're the answer man. What the hell do you want? You have all the experience. He's doing terrific. And I said that. And he got a kick out of that. He says, you're just sticking up for him. All you guineas all stick it together.
I think the biggest thing was the connection to you and the horse industry. I think that's what that's what's made this whole thing come together. Now, Tony, for people that aren't familiar, for whatever reason, who have not listened to this program over the past several years, if you're listening for the first time here today, Tony, the Godfather at the Lexus store. The Lexus store is out on the corner of New Circle and Liberty here in Lexington, Kentucky. This used to be the Lexus Equine Forum,
if you
remember. There was a time when Lexus was the title sponsor of the entire program, and you stayed involved. We have the Lexus Legends of the Turf coming up later this morning. That'll be a lot of fun to hear those stories, and it's still Pete's voice and Pete's concept behind those stories.
Oh, yeah. The stories were phenomenal. I mean, there's a lot of something called, folks, I don't want to bore you, but there's something called tradition in the horse industry. And it's steeped in tradition. It really and truly is.
As much as any other sport that I can think about.
Yes. I mean, it's just incredible. And from the owners, the trainers, to the guys that are working, you know, rubbing horses and walking horses and the gals. I mean, the place is unbelievable. Like, I can remember the first time at Belmont when I saw D-Wayne Lucas was on fire. And nobody knew anything about D-Wayne. Nobody. And so I went over one day because I was working at the track, I said, for Walter Kelly. And I said, I got to go see his barn. And his barn was totally different than anyone else's barns. It was absolutely pristine. Most of the barns are. Okay. But he had flowers hanging from all over the damn place. I mean, what is this?
Yeah.
What is he doing? Raising flowers here? What the heck is this? But he knew how to attract the people with the money.
To this day,
yeah.
If you walk into a D-Wayne Lucas barn, it is manicured impeccably.
Absolutely.
The dirt is actually raked in a pattern or a direction, and everything's going the same. It's like no other barn that you're going to walk into.
Hey, I started at Jamaica Racetrack, because that's where I'm from, folks, but Jamaica, Long Island. There's a fellow by the name of Trump He's from Jamaica, Long Island also, by the way. We're about 15 blocks, 12 blocks away from each other. And not that I ever knew him. But so I understand his mentality. But Jamaica Racetrack was a small track and was had a nickname. It was called the Bull Ring. And I was a kid, and I said, what the hell is a bull ring? You know, I didn't know anything about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, of course.
It's a real short circle. It's just a circle. It's almost a circle. So if you have a speed horse, they would all wait until Jamaica would open. They had two seasons, you know, in the spring.
What was it, like a half-mile racetrack?
Half mile. Yeah, and it was a bullet. If you had a horse, I can remember as a kid, 12, 13 years old, betting on a horse called Country Cat. And this horse couldn't win on any track in the United States except Jamaica. They come out of the gate, and the first call, it's Country Cat on the lead. And man, my God, you couldn't catch this horse because it was all turns.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Well, it's like Charlestown. When we go to Charlestown for the Charlestown Classic every year. Yeah. So, and we talk about that a lot. There are horses that excel on those bull rings because they can run the turns.
Right.
You have to do your running on the turns.
Right.
Some horses can't handle that.
Absolutely. And we've seen a lot of that lately also. But, the game is it's just a tremendous game. And the people, my God, the people would make it. You know, being 17 years old, and I met a fellow by the name of Vanderbilt. Have you ever heard of that name? Vanderbilt?
It's a pretty prominent name.
Mr. Vanderbilt. Yeah, he had a Cadillac and a chauffeur, and he'd be walking to speak to a groom that was handling his horse in between the barns at Belmont, and just having the horse graze. And that was Vanderbilt. I said, who the heck is that? He's got a three-piece suit. It's the middle of summer. I mean, he's got a chauffeur, and he's walking on the track, on the dirt.
Yeah.
So what the heck is that? That's Mr. Vanderbilt.
Well, the beauty of this game, and we talk about this a lot on this program and some of our other shows, is that you have somebody like that, like a Mr. Vanderbilt, who comes to the racetrack to see his horse, and he talks to that groom who is with the horse every single day, and he's relying on that groom to pass along accurate information on the horse. And it's a dynamic that exists in this sport, which is really special.
With no other sport.
Yeah,
with
really
no
special.
Other sport. I mean, there's nothing like it, and I'm a jock and a half, but there's nothing like this where you can get the most common person in the world, but they're great with horses, and they entertain some of the wealthiest people in the world.
Well, we are going to spend time looking back on some of the top moments of 2019. As Tony alluded to, this is a great game. There was no other sport like it. We're going to look back on some of the moments that have made the first half of the year special. We'll do that in the next segment. You'll hear the race calls, or at least some of the stretch calls, from some of the moments that we felt were notable, and then we'll be joined by the Big A, Anthony Stabile, at 8:40 Eastern to get his thoughts, and he will also preview the Grade 1 United Nations coming up at Monmouth later this afternoon. All of that still to come here on the network. Stay with us. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Woodbine is now racing 4 days a week, every Wednesday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And racing is back on the turf, as the E.P. Taylor Turf Course, home to the longest stretch in North America, is now available, along with the new 7-furlong inner turf course set to open in mid-June. Premium racing days this month include the Grade 2 Connaught Cup, June 1st, the Woodbine Oaks and Queen's Plate Trial, June 8th, and the Queen's Plate Festival, June 28th and 29th. Visit woodbine.com today.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
AlterNation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
From his first two crops, AlterNation has produced 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners with more than $4.7 million in earnings. 79% of his runners have won or placed, and AlterNation is among the leaders of his crop with average earnings per runner of over $42,000. AlterNation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Spendthrift Farm introduces its newest breeding program for 2019, the Safe Bet Program. Breed to a fourth-year stallion and watch his first crop of two-year-olds have measurable success on the racetrack in 2019, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born. To learn more about the Safe Bet Program, visit spendthriftfarm.com/safebet or call the farm today. That's spendthriftfarm.com/safebet. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Warrior's Charge off the turn in front. Another twist of fate. Here's War of Will, and he got through an opening on the inside of the gate pole. Owendale is storming down the center of the track, but it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by two lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast on the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness. And then it was Everfast in a photo with Owendale, followed by Warrior's Charge, and a final time of 1 minute 54.15 seconds. Today was the day for War of Will.
Larry Colmus with the call of the middle jewel of horse racing's Triple Crown this year. That was the Preakness Stakes War of Will, providing trainer Mark Cassie with his first American Classic win. Keep in mind, he's won classic races in Canada, but this was his first win in the United States in a classic race, and War of Will did it in style, somewhat of a vengeful run, if you want to look at it that way, after being interfered with by Maximum Security at the top of the stretch of the Kentucky Derby. That is one moment that many people will have on their list as being a top moment of 2019, and we want to hear from you. And I thought, rather than giving you three or four choices to vote on this morning, it would be better just to leave this open-ended and let you weigh in, because a top moment doesn't have to be a top race. It could be just a moment so far in 2019 that was special to you for whatever reason. And I'll give you an example of that in just a moment. But for now, let's go to our Twitter feed, at HRN on Twitter. You can let us know what, to this point, was your top moment of 2019. And we'll try to pass along those thoughts from you as we move throughout the program here this morning. And what I mean by it doesn't have to be a race, Tony, is that one of the moments that stands out to me that I'm never going to forget is after Mark Cassie, who is one of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, after he breaks through and wins his first classic in the United States, I had the chance to stop by his barn afterwards as we were walking out. And he was there, his wife Tina, and they were there with War of Will. There were a couple of other media members there. But I got to spend, maybe it was 8 or 10 minutes visiting with Mark and Tina afterwards. And just knowing what Mark has set out as his goal over the past couple of years to try to win an American Classic, knowing that that was his goal, to see him finally pull it off, I was so happy for him. And just that 8 or 10 minutes to talk with him afterwards at the barn, to me, is one of those moments that when I think back on 2019, that's a moment that's going to stand out to me.
Well, you know, that is so nice of you to say that. That doesn't surprise me because you're a class act. But I go all
this
the way
This is why
back.
I brought you on the show. To say things like that.
Well, I mean, I go all the way back to his dad, Norman Cassie.
Yeah.
Down in Ocala. He was the president of Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And I was a greenhorn in the horse world. And
yep.
Had my farm, little farm, and had horses. And I was bloodstocking, and I was trained. I was doing everything, all right? And he always was there for me, Norman Cassie. He was a real good man. I got to know Mark a little bit. He was a kid at that time. Going back late 80s, early 90s. Mark has he's been a class act. So you are right. And if you knew that family, they're tight.
Yeah.
They really are tight. So He meant that, you know, and I'm so glad that you acknowledge him on that. He's done a hell of a job. He's been a
think about the run. Not to interrupt you, but think about the run that Mark Cassie has been on. He wins the Preakness, comes back and wins the Belmont Stakes with Sir Winston. And I guess I'll say not just Mark Cassie, but the Cassie family.
Right.
His son Norman, who was his longtime assistant, went out on his own, I guess it was last year, and wins his first stakes race on Stephen Foster night at Churchill Downs 1 week after the Belmont. Incredible.
Well, you know, it's nice to see when you see people who are good people getting a break. I'm old school when it comes to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that Norman Sr., I used to always say to him, let me buy you a drink or something. He says, you know I don't drink. I said, that's why I said it. I know you don't drink. Buy you a Coke or something. but he always got a kick out of me, you know, be typical New Yorker, you know, always with a joke and always with a smile on my face and everything. And, you know, I know we talk about this so often, you and I. It's a great business. It's a great game. But it's tough also.
You have more losses than wins. You're going to play this game.
Yeah, you better. And you better know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
And then you, after everything else, after knowing confirmation and pedigrees and all that good stuff, you better get lucky.
Yeah, no, you have to. Again, weigh in on our Twitter feed, at HRRN. Let us know what your top moment so far in 2019 has been. Maybe it's a personal moment for you, like it was for me stopping by to see Mark Cassie, or maybe it's a race. Maybe it's this moment coming from the Arkansas Derby earlier this year.
As they run towards the top of the stretch in the Arkansas Derby, Omaha Beach, three quarters of a length, Improbable attacks on the outside, and these two have sprinted three lengths clear of Long Range Toddy. Then comes Laughing Fox, Omaha Beach, Improbable in second. Omaha Beach is now a length in front. Improbable gonna try him one more time. Omaha Beach, Improbable to the outside. Omaha Beach just won't let him by yet. Improbable second, Omaha Beach, yes! The 83rd Arkansas Derby goes to Omaha Beach over Improbable.
Vic Stauffer with his signature yes at the end of Omaha Beach's victory in that Arkansas Derby. That was a win that would catapult the Son of Warfront to the favorites role, morning line favorites role, in this year's Kentucky Derby. As we know, he would have to be scratched a couple of days before for Richard Mandela. Tony, there are going to be people that forget about Omaha Beach because he didn't compete in the three Triple Crown races, but this is a horse who showed all kinds of ability earlier this year and may be a force to be reckoned with later in the season.
This was the horse that I thought no one would even touch.
Yeah.
Right? Besides everything else, what the Irish have taught me in the horse business is the Irish are, to me, the best developers of this breed, this animal. Is a word called presence. And Omaha Beach had the presence. When he would come into the saddling area, he looked at those other horses as if they were, boys, you got to learn a lesson today. I mean, this horse was different. Now, if you don't know this business, you say, Tony's getting a little crazy here. He's getting a little long in the tooth, and he's getting a little shungada here. He's getting crazy. But no, these horses have a presence to them. They know when they do good. They really and truly do. And their whole goal, and the Irish have taught me this, is to keep the human being happy. Because if you keep the human being happy, you're taken good care of, and you're eating well. All right? And it sounds corny, but if you're around these animals, that is the God's honest truth. And Omaha Beach in that race, my God, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was sensational that day. He, of course, won the Rebel Stakes before that. Just blew through Arkansas with those two big victories and, of course, didn't get a chance to run for the Roses or in any of the Triple Crown races. But he is back with trainer Richard Mandela. They'll make sure that he is 110% before they get him back on the racetrack to start training again.
Yeah.
And we'll see Omaha Beach later in the year and maybe pointing for a race like the Traverse Stakes, which would be a lot of fun.
That might be a little bit short for him right now, depending on how far along they are with him. Because Traverse, that's tough up in Saratoga. I mean, Saratoga's tough.
It's hard to believe. You're right. It's only just over 2 months away from the Traverse.
Right.
I mean, that's hard to believe.
Yeah, we're getting close. We're starting to get close. I mean, you know, and he's got to perform because wherever he goes, he's going to be absolute dead chalk. There's no question about that. Then they're going to say, well, he's been off for 5-6 months and he needs a race. That's not this horse. So you got to get him ready.
If we were going to throw out choices for you to vote on as your moment of the year so far, I have to think that one of those choices that would be high on people's lists would be what happened beneath the Twin Spires on the first Saturday in May.
Maximum Security keeps on fighting. War of Will is there too as they come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security, so dead game. He keeps battling on. Maximum Security, Country House, 1-2 down to the line. Maximum Security wins the Kentucky Derby. And then it was Country House second, followed by Code of Honor third. And in behind them, Master Fencer, who was closing late inside of Tacitus. It's Maximum Security. He's never lost a race, and he wins it under Luis Saez.
Hold on, tickets. There's a rider's objection in this race, and it concerns the top two finishers. There's been a disqualification. Number 7, Maximum Security, disqualified from first for interference.
All right, that's Travis Stone with the announcement that disqualification, the first in the history of the Kentucky Derby. And, Tony, again, I have to think that if you're thinking about the signature moment of 2019, that's probably it right now, isn't it?
That race broke my heart, what they did to that horse. I'm sorry. I've been in the game.
You didn't like the DQ.
No.
I've been in the game
40, 45 years. I mean, I'm sorry. He didn't do anything. And the horse, he had the lead from the first step out of the gate. I mean, nobody was in front of him at any point in the race.
You don't think that he came out a couple of paths
no.
and interfered with War of Will, which
no.
charged, it caused that chain reaction?
No, sir. I really and truly don't. And for them to give it to the horse on the outside, was a Country Day?
Country House.
Country House. He had nothing to do with the race. I mean, he was on the extreme outside. He had nothing. At least give it to the horse that you think that he interfered with. I'm sorry. You had plenty of
time. Country House did finish second.
He finished second.
Behind,
yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously originally second. He was put up to first, but...
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. You can't, I get where you're coming from there, but you can't say we should award it to War of Will because he was impacted the most by what happened there, if indeed you do believe that something happened.
We don't know,
and Mark Cassie said that, we don't know if War of Will would have gone on, and you know,
right.
he may have flattened out.
Right.
Who knows?
Absolutely, and no one does know. We don't know anything of that at all. But I didn't see any major infraction, and I think what really made the whole issue even worse was what the three judges there did. That was an embarrassment to me. It took 25 minutes, and there was nobody talking about what the hell was going on. What are they looking for? I mean, I saw it, you know, 15
times.
It was
a long, and
ridiculous.
I think that they were trying to determine where each of the horses that was impacted was going to be placed in the race and how that was all going to unfold. Because with a horse like Maximum Security, if you do take him down, you have to put him behind mm-hmm. all of the other horses that were impacted by what you feel was his infraction. So he has to go all the way. That's why he went back to 17.
And I don't see that. I got to tell you right now. I don't see
that. And I think that's what made that so interesting and why it is maybe the signature moment of it may end up being the signature moment of 2019. First of all, it was an historic moment because it mm-hmm. never happened before. We saw a horse disqualified, but I do think that that's an interesting part of the story there is that, you know, you have a horse like Maximum Security and some people say, yes, he did it. Like me, mm-hmm. I thought it was a no brainer. I thought it was an easy disqualification and mm-hmm. other people like yourself
right.
are on the other side of the fence.
We're complete opposites on this one. Only because there's so much bumping that goes on in the course of a race. I didn't see anything that was that drastic in that, really. And if he did impede him for a step or two, so he impeded him. You know, you had the all the other time the horse could have made the move.
Yeah, there are people that are on both sides of this argument, and I'm sure that you have your own opinion too. You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, and again, let us know your moment of the year and let us know your thoughts on that situation. And of course, we've talked about it an awful lot over the past couple of months, but you can still feel free to weigh in on our Twitter feed as well. let's do this. Let's take a look at what happened last week. We'll skip the Belmont Stakes here, Lee. Let's go to the Pegasus Stakes last week when Maximum Security made his return to the races at Monmouth Park.
Maximum Security being asked for his best. Last Judgment is into the third spot. Length and a half more to Identifier in direct order, but Maximum Security is going to have to work for it. King for a Day on the outside, and these two arrive at the top of the stretch. They've separated themselves by five. Maximum Security all in toward the inside. King for a Day, a final furlong, greets Maximum Security, who's just a half length in front. King for a Day on the outside, going to make him earn it at the 16th pole. It's a question of who wants it more. King for a Day forges to a narrow advantage. Maximum Security has been defeated. King for a Day by a length. Maximum Security second. Direct Order was third, fourth, Last Judgment.
Well, how about that? King for a Day pulling off an upset over Maximum Security in that Pegasus Stakes. That was last Sunday, at Monmouth Park. Now 2-for-2 here in 2019 and 3-for-5 lifetime. The son of Uncle Mo gets it done last week. And there you go. Maximum Security, a horse that looked like he had that field over a barrel, mm-hmm. comes up just a little bit short. But look, that should set him up really nice if he's going to move forward to the Haskell and then races like the Travers
right.
later on.
But I agree. I thought Maximum Security was a lock in that race, honestly. But the other horse, King for a Day, he was King for a Day. I mean, he won it fair and square, and that was the game. And Mark Cassie did a hell of a job, you know, in getting that horse ready.
Yeah, great ride by Joe Bravo and gets
Jersey
the victory.
Jersey Joe.
And
then we got Jersey Jude too, by the way.
Well, maybe.
Yes,
he could be. He could still be Detroit Jude right now.
He still could be. Yep, it's hard to get out of Detroit sometimes.
I'll have to check his Twitter feed and see if he has arrived at Monmouth Park. But as we told you at the top of the show, quite the adventure for the Pontiff of the Pick Four trying to make it to New Jersey. He's supposed to be there last night. That didn't happen. We'll see if he gets there. We'll try to update you later in the program. All right, let's do this. We'll save some of the discussion on the top moments for the older horse division, let's call it the classic division, for our next segment when we're joined by the Big A, Anthony Stabile. He'll join us live from New York coming up in just about 8 minutes or so. But it is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. And Tony, before I get to this segment, that of course Lexus is the sponsor, has been for a very, very long time, I received a nice note on Twitter from a listener who loves this segment. He asked me who the person was that voiced these segments and wrote these segments. And, of course, it was Pete Coolis, who is no longer with us. But this was Pete's brainchild. He had several of these that he put together. And I only wish he could have stayed with us longer, where he could have written a few of them that were a little more current. Like, these are back a ways. But I think that's what makes them so good, because we are remembering the history, the tradition, and the lore and the mystique of this sport.
But, you know, Pete was his own man. If you ever heard of the word opinionated.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Pete Coolis, it didn't matter what the hell you were talking about. He had an opinion on something, and I loved him for that. I really and truly do. It's not like I don't know anything about that.
And he loved it to kind of get under people's skin just a little bit on purpose.
Yes.
He would have a little fun with that. And some people didn't. They would take him the wrong way.
Well, see, but, I don't care. He was great. How many languages did he speak?
No, it was.
It was ridiculous. It was like 6-7 languages.
Yeah, fluently. Fluently. Yeah, it incredible. But he is the person behind the Lexus Legends of the Turf stories that you hear every week at this time. And our thanks to the Lexus Store of Lexington for making these possible. Here it is, your Lexus Legends of the Turf. We're back with the Big A right after this.
In early October of 1920, amidst full pastel resplendence of early fall, some 30,000 racing fans gathered at Kenilworth Park in suburban Toronto, Canada, in eager anticipation of the much-ballyhooed match race between Sam Riddle's Titan of the Turf, Man o' War, and the 1919 Triple Crown winner, the first ever, by the way, Sir Barton. Man o' War was regarded as virtually invincible in many racing quarters and was an overwhelming favorite amongst those in attendance to defeat Colonel Ross's superb 4-year-old. The distance was 1¼ miles, the purse $75,000 plus a $5,000 gold cup. There had been a modicum of controversy generated among racing fans when Earl Sandy, the regular pilot aboard Sir Barton, was replaced for this particular race by Jack Keogh. Commander Ross, the horse's owner, felt Sandy was not riding in top form at that time. The rider aboard the Immortal Big Red was his customary reinsman, Clarence Cummer. As a matter of fact, Colonel Ross had first call on Cummer's services, but he deferred to Cummer's wishes in allowing him to ride Riddle's horse. Colonel Ross said, quote, "My action is taken without any prejudice to Sandy, and I am only exercising my right as owner of Sir Barton." The two horses answered the call to post and paraded before the stands looking absolutely fit on their way to the gate. Man of War looked about nonchalantly as though this were an ordinary occurrence. Henry Morrissey was the starter, and he waited until both champions were perfectly ready. Then he sent them on their way as the webbing flew up, and to the huge roar of the vast throng, the race that was billed as, quote, "the race of the century" was indeed underway. Sir Barton was well away, and he took the lead for the first 16th, but that was all. Man of War was quickly given his head by Cummer, and he shot by Sir Barton to establish a clear lead as he went the first quarter in a rapid 22-3. It was Man of War by two open lengths and still somewhat in reserve by Cummer as he hit the hop in 46-2, three quarters in 111-2. Keogh wrapped Sir Barton a couple of times with a stick but could get no more out of him as Man of War coasted into and on around the turn, coasting while galloping freely with those long, smooth strides for which he had been well noted. By the time they hit the top of the stretch, Man of War had opened up to a three-length advantage after clocking a mile in 137-4. Cummer glanced back at his rival, who was struggling valiantly while fully extended but not closing a single inch of ground. Man of War was just breezing along in synchronized motion and continued to increase his margin, cruising to the wire a winner in smashing fashion by an open seven lengths. The final time was 2:03 flat, and Cummer later said, quote, "It was about as easy a score as Man of War had ever chalked up. It was the lope for the last quarter. Had he wanted to, he could easily have gone a couple of seconds faster. It was far faster than I expected, and I knew Sir Barton had no business with Man of War after we had gone the first quarter," end of quote. But Sam Riddle was his customary modest self after the winning effort of his stalwart, and Commander Ross, the losing owner, was among the very first to offer his congratulations. It all happened on a resplendent fall day in a beautiful setting at Kenilworth Park in suburban Toronto, Canada, October of 1920. A truly great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a B-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake B-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Power. Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there, coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they come for the top of the stretch, Quip confronting Tom's d'Etat. They're head-and-head for the lead. Seeking the Soul is locked and loaded in behind. Giftbox is also right there. They're off the turn. They're into the stretch. Tom's d'Etat and Quip head-and-head with 3/16 to go. Seeking the Soul's bearing down. Giftbox is fourth. And from far, far back, Yoshida's rallying to be fifth. Down to the final 16th. Seeking the Soul bearing down on Quip. Quip has to fight back. Seeking the Soul with all the momentum. Seeking the Soul scores in the Foster. Beating Quip on the wire. Tom's d'Etat was third, and Giftbox checks in fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Here in the month of June, Mike Penna and special guest co-host, the Godfather, Tony Attiano. We are with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you back with us as we continue to look back on some of the top moments so far in 2019. Still to come, going to be joined by trainer Josie Carroll as she looks ahead to next week's Queen's Plate at Woodbine, and Jay Priven coming up toward the end of the program right around 9:35 Eastern time. We'll get a chance to talk to Jay and get his thoughts on some of his moments that stand out to him. And of course, that Kentucky Derby going to be very high on a lot of people's lists. Seeking the Soul won the Stephen Foster. That was a race you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network last weekend at Churchill Downs. And Seeking the Soul for trainer Dallas Stewart, catapulting to the top of many people's lists in terms of the Breeders' Cup Classic older horse division. Travis Stone had the call for you there coming out of the commercial break. Well, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, is the host of our Express Bet radio programs during the week. He is also the host of our Weekend Stakes preview show presented by Naira Betts and the Brisnet.com call-in show. If you can't tell, he does an awful lot for us here on the network, and very grateful to the Big A who joins us now. And before I actually formally welcome him to the show, Godfather, you have your own music that we welcome you with, the Godfather music. I thought it was only appropriate that the Big A have some type of mob music to bring him on.
Hey, gumbare, ci vuoi suonare, chi si suona un friscaletto, e come si suona un friscaletto.
Big A, does that work okay for you?
It works perfectly. That's my risotto making music right there, Baron, and you know that because you've witnessed it firsthand.
Every time I hear that song now, it's all I can think about is you sitting in my kitchen on the chair in front of the stove stirring the risotto. That's all I can think about.
That was a fun time. Yeah, Breeders' Cup last year was a good time. Great risotto. Got to meet my man Scotty and Wanda. Wanda just celebrated a birthday. And unfortunately, I didn't get to meet the Godfather, but next time I'm down in Lexington, I certainly will. Tony, how are you?
Well, listen, first of all, anybody who's from the lovely state of New York that we're from, especially in the city area, and has the name of Anthony, They never pronounce that Anthony. We are always called Anthony.
Right.
Am I right?
It's funny. Yeah, exactly. My friend Tony Giannone, we were at the we were at my friend's cigar shop last night, and we were getting ready to play a game of dominoes after dinner, and he said, Anthony, let's go. And somebody looked up and said, you just call him Anthony?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's from Queens, from Brooklyn. He's
That's
Anthony,
it.
Man.
There you
it's
go,
all
man.
In the end. It's Anthony.
They have their own language, the Italians up there. And by the way, that's Julius LaRosa singing Hey Gumbare.
That's who it is. Exactly right.
He's the man.
Yeah, I thought you would like that. We had to do something special for you here this morning, Big A. We're spending some time looking back on the top moments of 2019. Last segment, we talked about Omaha Beach and how he was so dominant before having to scratch before the Kentucky Derby as the morning line favorite. We talked about Country House and then looked at the return of Maximum Security last week in the Pegasus Stakes, where he was upset by King for a Day. Thought it would be fun to save the older horse division for you and to kind of get your thoughts. We heard the clip of Seeking the Soul winning the Stephen Foster coming out of the commercial break. But look, I mean, he's a very talented horse, a horse who has always been pretty consistent for Dallas Stewart, and now a huge win in the Stephen Foster to punch his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Classic. If you think about that older horse division, what are some of the top moments that you've seen so far in 2019?
It kind of gives me a little bit of a headache right now, if I'm being honest with you, Baron. you know, and by headache, we've seen some good performances, but the division's in chaos a little right. bit. And I think we need to – somebody said this on Twitter the other day. I think we need to embrace that chaos because it's nice to have the gun runners around and the Arrogates around, but I think it makes for more interesting racing and – you know, what we do, good radio, when there is some dissension in the ranks, when there are, you know, some divisions that are kind of wide open. You know, McKinsey has danced quite a few dances at some different distances. I think, you know, I think he needs to certainly be respected right now. You know, Matoli is as strange as it sounds for a horse that hasn't gone past a one-turn mile, I mean, from what we've seen from Matoli so far, are you going to doubt anything he can do, right? Derby Day, they told us he couldn't go 7 furlongs and he couldn't rate. Well, he did both. And then in that mile, they told us he couldn't get a mile. And he did that, and he had a – you know, people talk about McKenzie's trip in the Met Mile. But, you know, with a gun to my head as far as on dirt, that Met Mile was the best older horse – effort I've seen all year because he was in the middle of the track and he was fighting off a lot of other speed and he kept on going. I know McKenzie didn't have a clean trip, but Matoli didn't have the best trip in there. I mean, Matoli did a lot of heavy lifting and, you know, they're the ones right now. I'm looking forward to Thunder Snow coming back and forth. I think he ran very well in the mile. It's kind of hard for the Euro milers to come here and play our mile game because we're just faster on dirt. You know, but a horse like him, and he's got to feel like the late Bill Buckner going back into Shea when he was third in the Breeders' Cup last year, the Classic. He ran a giant race. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. We'll see what John Sadler does with Catalina Cruiser. Seeking the Soul obviously was good. You got Vino Rosso in the offing, and Catholic Boy. Jonathan yeah. Thomas has a lot of options with a horse that is as good on dirt as he is on turf, and it'll be curious to see what route he takes throughout the year.
Be careful when you start talking about Catholic Boy, Anthony.
Well, he never had a prayer, according to the announcer. The rest of them never had a prayer, I should say.
But yeah, I tell you what, your assessment on the Met Mile is right on target, man. That was a great race. And
I mean, you know, I'm as a handicapper, just because it's a great – listen, I love the Met Mile. The Met Mile is my second favorite race of the year behind the Belmont. You know, but you still have to use the same tenets of handicapping right. that you use. That horse did a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of the dirty work, you know, and the inside was the place to be. And, man, he just kept on trucking. Right. And he was – you know, I said to somebody a couple of days later, maybe even the next day, I said – you know, with the division up in the air right now, if his Hall of Fame trainer, Steve Asmussen, says, you know what, I'm going to try and stretch this horse out in a Whitney. I'm going to try and get him a mile and an eighth and really go after this older horse award. Are you going to not use Matoli on your tickets? I mean, he's done two things nobody thought he could. Mm-hmm. Three things. Mm-hmm. The rating, first the 7 furlong barrier, and then the mile barrier. Like, are you going to let Matoli? I'm not going to let Matoli beat me. If Steve told me he was going to run him over the hurdles on the moon, I'm using him in my ticket. I'm not letting him beat me.
So, yeah, good man.
He's a racehorse.
Yeah.
He's a throwback, too. He smashed mouth in your face, come get me. And I love everything about him. He's such a nice horse.
I don't think you discount Thunder Snow. I thought he ran a really nice race in there for a distance that may not have been his favorite distance. I think if you're looking ahead to a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic, a horse like Thunder Snow could be very, very dangerous as we make our way there.
Yeah, the 1-2-3s. The 1-2-3 out of the Met Mile are probably where this division is going to go to. Now, I've been saying this for a long time. I think McKenzie has real distance limitations. I don't know if a mile and a quarter really is what he wants to do. I'm pretty confident it's not what he wants to do. But it's going to be very hard for trainer Bob Baffert, unless this horse shows throughout the summer, you know, if he goes to the Pacific Classic and he just shows that he doesn't want the mile and a quarter, it's going to be hard to run a horse of his caliber in the dirt mile. It's probably where he belongs, though, in my opinion. He may disprove me over the next 4 months. So he's probably the one I would be selling as far as the Classic goes because of the mile and a quarter. I don't really think he wants a mile and a quarter. I could be wrong, but you know, I think Gift Box shows that he's beaten up on a weaker division out in Southern California. And again, when he beat McKenzie, I think that was just if McKenzie really doesn't want to go the Classic distance. That's just my opinion. And I know we're kind of off topic here, but we're looking back on the year. How can you not love Bricks and Mortar and everything he's done?
Yeah.
I mean, my first half star of the year is undoubtedly Bricks and Mortar. From what he came back from, a 15-month break, four different tracks, four different distances. He won that Melvin Muniz. He didn't even want to win that day. He had a chase market off around it. He doesn't want to chase. He had to lay on that horse around a racetrack and just outclass him the last eighth of a mile. And, you know, from what he's battled back from, he had what most horses would have had a career-ending injury. But Seth Klarman and Chad Brown gave him all the time he needed to come back. And he's my favorite horse in training right now. So I'm going to try and cavil on him a little bit. But, man, he's just been an amazing story this year. And when all said and done, unless something really strange happens, I think we're going to give him the Horse of the Year title this year.
Well, interesting. Five consecutive victories, two grade ones in consecutive fashion for Bricks and Mortar, taking the Turf Classic at Churchill Downs, then the Manhattan last time out at Belmont Park on June 8th. He's certainly been exceptional here this year. Big A, before I let you go, and about a minute away from the commercial break, I did tell folks that you would share your thoughts on the Grade 1 United Nations at Monmouth today, sticking with that older horse picture. Bigger picture, 3-1 on the morning line from the inside post. You have Focus Group at 2-1, and you have Channel Cat in post 2 at odds of 7-2. How'd you see it?
Yeah, when Bricks looks down the Shedro in the Chad Brown barn, he sees my boy Focus Group not far away from him. You know, last time in the Man of War, he just didn't get going. I think he needed the race off a big effort at Gulfstream. I like Focus Group. Jude and I are big fans of Monarch's Glen. It's a Judmont gelding. We like when they keep the geldings because we think they have some ability. This horse was not going to get the mile and an eighth last time. He gets a mile and 3/8. He'll need some pace in front of him. I think those are the two. I think Focus Group will probably win it, though.
Yeah, give your man Jude a call and check on him. He's had a bit of a rough trip so far trying to get to New Jersey.
Yeah. He's like a porcupine in a balloon factory with that. He's got more trouble in it than a porcupine in a balloon factory with this trip getting out to Jersey. It's crazy.
Big A, listen, man, appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking a little time here this morning. We'll remind people they can head to our website, check out the podcast of the Naira Betts Weekend Stakes Preview that is posted now. You and Jude look at all the races around the country, including an in-depth look at that United Nations. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, Big A, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com.
I won't hold my breath.
He's got more Embrace the Race swag than...
I figured.
Yeah, we'll get it to the Big A,
He's
though, for
New
sure.
From New York. New York, you always have swag.
All right, we have to get to another commercial break. We'll do that. We'll come back and get you set for the second half of the show. We'll tell you all about it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Attention Kentucky breds. Make plans to race at the upcoming Kentucky Downs meet starting August 31st, where Kentucky breds compete for huge purses. Kentucky breds will run for $130,000 in maiden events, with allowance races offering up to $145,000, the highest in the nation. With just 5 days of racing, showcasing 14 stakes races and 4 graded stakes, with additional purse money available for KTDF eligible horses, Kentucky Downs is the place to race a Kentucky bred this summer. Visit KentuckyBred.org for details.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Wine is made in virtually every country in the world, and I'm ready to give you a tour to find the right one.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with a juicy Pinot Noir.
Now with 2 locations in Lexington. Visit our newest store in Hamburg, off Sir Barton Way. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!
Broken Vow continues to deliver rock-solid results. The top 10 Son of Unbridled has sired nearly 150 black-type stakes horses, 75 black-type stakes winners, and over $71 million in earnings. Among those sired by Broken Vow last season were Chocolate Martini, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, and Life in Shambles, winner of the Grade 3 Fall Highweight. Sire of Eclipse Champion Champagne Room, Broken Vow has sired additional Grade 1 winners, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, Sassy Image, and Cotton Blossom. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But here comes a late, finding stride late in the game, and she goes right on by.
Elate, the 5-year-old daughter of Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, recorded yet another graded stakes victory, taking the Grade 2 Fleur de Lis at Churchill Downs last Saturday, recording a 96 buyer speed figure. That was the 5th career stakes victory for Elate, who was one of 5 stakes winners for Medaglia d'Oro here in 2019. And Elate is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro is the horse with the Midas touch. In 2018, Medaglia d'Oro joined Northern Dancer, Stormcat, and AP Indy as the only stallions ever to sire as many as $8 million yearlings in a single year. Watch for his latest crop of yearlings at the upcoming sales. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Wandegada joins Telekinesis in the Queen's Plate, and splitting them is Cooler Mike, and down the outside running on is also ahead by a century. Wandegada's in front, and she's dashed away in the Queen's Plate, ahead by a century into second. But there's no doubt who's the best today, and it's all about Wonder Gadot, Wonder Woman herself, demolishing them in the Queen's Plate. What a brilliant win. Ahead by a century second. Cooler Mike third, Strike Me Down fourth, Telekinesis was fifth.
Robert Geller with the call of last year's Queen's Plate. We'll be back there next Saturday. We'll be live from Woodbine. You can join us on this program. We'll be hosting the show from Woodbine, and then we'll be back in the afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern, is when we kick off our exclusive radio coverage of the 160th running of the Queen's Plate, that coverage presented by our friends at Twin Spires and Hillendale Farms, and our thanks to them for making it all possible. You can listen on Sirius XM, channel 156, and of course stream us live on our website at horseracingradio.net. It's the 160th Queen's Plate. Mark Cassie getting the victory last year with Wonder Gadot and looking for another one this year. He'll have a couple of chances, as will Josie Carroll, who is going to join us coming up in just a couple of minutes. And Josie's a great story in her own right, Tony. She is going to be inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame. She was the first female trainer ever to saddle a winner of the Queen's Plate. She will be the first female trainer ever inducted into the Hall of Fame in Canada. That's pretty cool.
Oh, she's. I know a lot about her because I was. I'm going to ask her about a particular person if she's still working for her. A gal by the name of Scotty, and Scotty was excellent. She came from, of course, Scotland and England.
Her nickname was Scotty.
Her nickname was Scotty.
Okay.
And just wanted to find out if everything was okay with her. She's still doing good, but yeah, I knew a lot about her. But she's just a tremendous lady, and you know, it's hard for some of the women to really be recognized as top trainers. And Josie Carroll has always been a top trainer.
Yeah, and I think we've had several female trainers on our Trainer Talk program over the course of the past several years, and they will all tell you that, you know, yes, I am female, but I am a horse trainer, and I couldn't agree more.
Oh, they're excellent.
Yeah, exactly. And Josie Carroll is good as it gets, male or female, mm-hmm. and she absolutely deserves to be in that Hall of Fame, and would be great to see her win another Queen's Plate coming up next weekend. So we'll get a chance to talk to her about her two opportunities that she will have. She will saddle Avies Flatter, who is the two-year-old champion from last year in Canada, and she will saddle He's a Macho Man, both of those horses going to the post next Saturday. Real quick, before we get to the second half of the show and to Josie's interview, some responses coming in to our question at HRN on Twitter. We asked you what, to this point, has been your top moment in thoroughbred racing in 2019. Doesn't have to be a race. It can just be a moment. Our good friend Mark Toothaker weighing in, saying that his longtime friends Bill and Corinne Heiligbroek, winning two grade ones on Kentucky Derby Day, Mia Mischief and Mitoli, great folks that have put a ton into the game. And Mark, you're 100% right on that one. Mark Cassie winning the Preakness of War of Will, Country House, another response here. Let's see, Royal Ascot getting a vote from our friend Michael Hernan, the 2019 Royal Ascot meet, which, by the way, going on right now. And DeTori at Royal Ascot. So some cool responses. Keep them coming, and we'll try to pass those along later in the program. We're going to pause 10 seconds for station identification. We're back with hour number two right after this on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Point of Honor has taken the lead. Ulele runs after her. Cookie Dough is third. Point of Honor and Ulele down to the wire. Point of Honor wins the black-eyed Susan Under, hot-riding Javier Castellano.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th, and it's going to be Bolo coast to coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Mr. Ritz and Super Tabbit neck and neck. Super Tabbit, Mr. Ritz, I hit the wire. A head bop between the two Super Tabitol. Mr. Ritz, a head bop decides it. A thriller in the Eclipse.
Hunting Horn trying to hold on. Here comes Channel Maker on the outside, ranging up alongside. Magic Wand and Arc Lower closing in two. Channel Maker strikes the front. Channel Maker wins the battle war.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here in the month of June. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, special guest co-host, the Godfather Tony Attiano. We are coming to you from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. And if you missed any portion of the first half of the program or any of our show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast will be available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can do that shortly after we finish up at 10 o'clock Eastern time this morning, and you can listen to all of our programming. All of our talk shows are there for you to listen to at your leisure at horseracingradio.net. Next Saturday, as I just mentioned, this program is going to be live from Woodbine. We'll be returning to that outstanding racetrack in the suburbs of Toronto. We'll be doing that next Saturday. We'll be live with this program and with our race coverage, which begins at 4 Eastern next Saturday afternoon, the 160th running of the Queen's Plate. And trainer Josie Carroll will be in search of a third victory in that race, her first coming back in 2006, and it sounded just like this.
And they're inside the quarter pole. Edenwald and Sterwins. Who will blink first? Sterwins on the outside. To the inside, Edenwald. Malakoff has flattened out a bit. Then Shoaily Smoo. Edenwald on the inside is running the race of his life. They're in the final 16th of a mile. Edenwald and Emil Ransemi to win the 147th running of the Queen's Plate. Sterwins was second, a show photo between Malakoff and Ascot Bill.
How about that? Edenwald getting the victory in 2006. It was the first of two victories in the Queen's Plate for Josie Carroll, who will be inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame coming up in August. A well-deserved honor for a trainer who has, to date, saddled more than 800 winners in her career. And if she can pull it off next Saturday, she will earn a third victory in Canada's most historic horse race. And Josie is nice enough to spend a little time with us here this morning. Josie, really do appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on.
Josie, we just played the race call, the stretch call of Edenwald winning the Queen's Plate in 2006. When you think back on that particular day and that moment when Edenwald crossed the finish line, what are some of the things that come to mind?
That was a huge moment for me. You know, growing up in Canada, this was such a showcase race for us. I mean, it's our version of the Derby. I mean, it's run for 160 years, you know, so it was really monumental, and it was a big moment for some owners that early in my career had taken a chance on me, so it was particularly nice to win for them.
Yeah, a very special moment, I'm sure. And just for people listening here in the United States, put into perspective what the Queen's Plate means to the racing industry in Canada.
Well, I mean, it's our showcase race. It's a race that the whole country is aware of. So, you know, in a sport that doesn't get a lot of attention or recognition, it's something that Canadians all recognize.
Yeah, they certainly do, and we can't wait to get back there. It was special for us to be part of that event the last couple of years. One thing that strikes me, Josie, is the pageantry that's involved with international races, and the Queen's Plate certainly doesn't take a backseat to anybody when you talk about the pageantry and the way that things come together before the actual race.
Well, I think it's something we're kind of losing in racing, is that old time glamour, I guess, so to speak. But you know, the fact that the Queen's representative arrives in the Landau with the horse guard, and you know, all that just makes for a very exciting day. The winning owner gets a telegram from the Queen after they send her a telegram announcing who has won, you know, that rendition of the plate. So it's very, very special, the history of it.
Josie, Tony Artiano, I'm also known as the Godfather here. I've heard a lot about you. I know a lot about you from a gal that worked for you for years. I don't know if she's still up there. I just wanted to ask. Scotty? I don't remember her last name, Josie.
I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
Yes, the gal who used to work for you for years, she's from the UK originally. She had a farm in Ocala. I got to know her there. Scotty,
her name was Linda.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well, Linda is her Christian name, but they all call her Scotty. I couldn't remember her last name. Is she still with you?
You know, I haven't seen her for many, many years now. I the last I heard of her, she was in Ocala.
Yeah, that's where I knew her from. She was a nice person. And
you're dating
good people.
Yourself, Godfather. You're dating yourself.
Yeah,
I
am dating myself. But she said nothing but the kindest things about you, and that's where I became a Josie Carroll fan. So, because you're good people. And I love what you just said about the old-time stuff that they used to have, and they still do in England, where the Queen comes out to the races. And, I mean, it's wonderful. Here, We're starting to lose a lot of that in a lot of aspects of American culture, though. I hate to say that, but that's the truth.
We are, and I think it really fires people up.
Absolutely.
You know, it fires the general public up. Mm-hmm. It just makes it a special day. You know, people come out dressed and hats. And,
right.
It's just a different form of entertainment in a very casual world.
Josie, we talked about the first victory in the Queen's Plate with Eden Wald and how special that was to you and to the owners. You came back again in 2011, won it for the second time with the Philly Inglorious. Tell me about that day. What did that day mean to you and to the Connections?
You know, she was an exceptional filly. And coming off her Canadian Oaks win, she just got better, you know. You know, we hesitated a little coming back with a filly in 3 weeks. But she just improved so much off that race that it seemed the move to go with her. Race day was very, very hot, I recall. Horses were all getting hot in the paddock. We had walked around there for a very long time. She was just so cool and collected. In fact, when she got bored in the paddock and tired of walking around, she put her head down and tried to graze on us in the middle. You know, just... At that point, we knew she was going to run the race of her life when she was just so collected as everybody was kind of losing it. So, you know, to see her coming down the stretch and just dominate the way she did was very exciting.
We mentioned at the top of the interview that you will be inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame in August of this year, and a well-deserved honor. Congratulations on that. Tell
Thank
me about
you.
Getting the news that you were going to get into the Hall of Fame.
You know, something as a kid coming around the races you'd never in your life have expected to happen. I just find it a huge honor, and I really appreciate, you know, the people that have put me in there.
When you were growing up thinking about getting into the horse business, were there people that you looked up to and said, you know, maybe someday I can have my name mentioned with them, and those people are now in the Hall of Fame?
You know, when I came around the racetrack, growing up, it was just all about the horses and all the people. I think the horses were my heroes. And then I came around the racetrack, and, you know, I was fortunate to work for two Hall of Famers. Mac Benson, who trained for Winfields, was one of the first people I worked for on the racetrack. And, you know, I did a couple of years with Roger Atfield. So two tremendous trainers that helped mentor me. And it's such an honor to be, you know, have my name beside theirs.
What are some of the things that you took away from working with those two trainers who are so outstanding that you're still using with your operation today?
Mac Benson was tremendously, tremendously organized. And I found everything flowed so well in his barn. It kept everybody working there happy because they always knew what they were going to do. That was one of the big takes from his barn. And then Roger's just such a canny horseman. You know, he's such a details-oriented trainer. He doesn't miss anything. And I think you really learn to pay attention watching somebody like him because he never takes his eyes off his horses.
Do they call you, or how does that work when you get inducted into the Hall of Fame? Do they have somebody that you worked with call you? How does it work?
Tom Cosgrove, who is the, you know, the representative of the Hall of Fame, called me, and it happens that I first met Tom when he was grooming horses for the Smythe family when I first came on the racetrack on field placement from school. So it was really great to hear the news from him because, again, he was somebody that, you know, that taught a kid that was coming around a few things about what to do.
Yeah, Josie Carroll is our special guest here this morning on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I should say Canadian Hall of Famer Josie Carroll, our special guest. And Josie, that does have a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It's pretty wonderful. I'm pretty excited.
Well, you should be. Let's talk about the two horses that you're going to send to the post next Saturday in the Queen's Plate. And I guess we'll start with the champion, Avies Flatter. Juvenile champion from last year, has been so, so impressive. Tell me a little bit about Avies Flatter pointing for this race.
You know, this was a horse that from the very beginning showed a lot of raw talent. I think we always knew we had something special on our hands. He just, whatever you ask of him, he just seems to rise to the occasion. He did win at a mile and an eighth last year. I'm pretty confident he'll get the distance. And he's training very aggressively into this race.
How do you bring a horse up to a race like the Queen's Plate and make sure that they're going to peak at that one moment next Saturday?
Well, you hope you get it right, I guess. this particular horse, after his two races in Kentucky, the timing was such that I didn't think we'd get another race in here that would fit in a timely fashion. So it's been a matter of training him into the race. But this is a horse that puts so much effort into everything he does. He kind of makes it easy. He's worked a mile in 38 with no company. He's just that kind of horse that makes it simple. You tell the rider what you want this horse to do, and this horse just does it.
How about He's a Macho Man, son of Breeders' Cup Classic hero Mucho Macho Man, more lightly raced than AV's Flatter. Tell us a little bit about him.
I think he's my sleeper. he's had two races on the Tapeta surface, both of them around two turns, and won both. He had a race in Gulfstream that's deceivingly bad on his form. He hit the starting gate leaving there, banged the left side of his leg and body, and actually missed a month. So, I think you throw that race out. This horse has done nothing wrong. Very different type of horse from AV's Flatter, kind of laid back. You got to ask him for everything you want him to do. But I think his style will very much suit this race. He just lays back until you ask him, and then once he gets in gear, he just rolls on.
If you could design the ideal racehorse to win the Queen's Plate, what characteristics would that racehorse possess, Josie?
I think it's all about temperament. I think it's both the horses I won the plate with were business on the racetrack, but had it all together in the stall, in the paddock. They kept their cool, and I think when you're going into a mile and a quarter race with all the hoopla going on, I think how they handle it is key.
How do you keep your cool?
It can get a little nerve-wracking, but, you just keep going.
Complete this sentence for me. To win a third Queen's Plate would be?
Extraordinary.
There you go. Extraordinary. Josie Carroll, she is an extraordinary trainer. She is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, as we mentioned, coming up in August, and so sensational. Josie, before we let you go, when you think back on your Hall of Fame career, so many top moments, but if there were a couple of moments that will always stand out to you for whatever reason, what are those moments going to be?
I'll tell you, the first one was, oddly enough, not when Edenwald won the Queen's Plate, but when he was galloping back in front of the crowd, and as he came back, there was this wave of cheering that sort of swept through the grandstand, and it was such a moment of pure appreciation for the horse and what he's done. It's a moment that always stands out in my memory.
Well, Josie, we appreciate everything you've done as well. Keep up the great work. All the best next Saturday in the Queen's Plate. We look forward to being part of it again with our exclusive radio coverage that begins at 4 Eastern. And can't wait to get up there and look forward to seeing you as well.
Great. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Josie Carroll here on HRRN. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, she will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at Embrace the Race. .com. Dan Loisel, by the way, had the call of Edenwald winning in 2006, also Inglorious. Longtime announcer, Robert Geller is now the caller. He has replaced Dan Loisel. You won't find two better guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and I love Dan's calls, and to go back and hear some of those. I'm so glad that we got a chance to play Edenwald winning, and it was cool to hear her talk about her signature moment, one thing that stands out to her with all the big wins, all the big moments she's been part of, the moment when he came back and the cheers and the roar from the crowd.
See, that's That's part of the showmanship of the game, and we're losing a lot of that. One of the things that I'm so PO'd about right now, I get the Herald Loser every morning. Herald Leader every morning. It's a terrible paper, but I'm an old dog, and I'm used to reading a newspaper in the morning with my
You like
coffee.
To have the paper in your hand. Yes, I was like that with the racing form for a long time.
Absolutely. I mean,
I'm still like that. I print off the Brisk Pass performances now, but I print them off. I have to have something in my hand.
But, Mike, here, we are the horse capital of the world, Lexington, Kentucky. And they had the entries for either Churchill Downs or Keeneland. And it's just the horse's name and the odds. What the? I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, I think, you know, coverage of the sport in all newspapers around the country now is...
Since I don't get to see the other papers.
Yeah, it's a dinosaur. They're all like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I mean, you'll get occasionally around the Kentucky Derby, you'll get, right. you know, the Courier Journal and the Louisville newspaper that will put articles out there, and they'll do things while Churchill's running and things like that, maybe more so than a newspaper in New York, for example.
Well, but the Daily News.
In comparison, it pales in comparison to what it used to be in newspapers. Now, but I think in general, newspapers themselves,
you
mentioned it, you're a dinosaur,
yeah.
right? You're still reading the newspaper, but you're like me. You like to have that paper in your hand.
Well, you see, but I'm right now, because I don't know if you heard this report that came out yesterday about the young people in this country right now. They're getting bones growing on the base of their neck.
I did see that, yeah.
That's because they keep looking at that damn
Posture.
Phone.
Posture.
That phone, the phone, the phone. I can't take it anymore with the phone.
Yeah, you don't text me. You never send me a text.
No, I don't text.
You never send me a
text. If you text me... I call you.
Your kid will text me. You never text me.
No, he's into that crap. That's on me. I want to hear your voice. Somebody, a good friend of mine texted me the other day, and I haven't spoken to him in a few years, not about 3 years. And I said to him, Dan, you just text me. I called you. He said, I figured that's
so wait,
what
you receive
gonna...
the text. You don't return
no,
the
no,
text.
No, I receive
right.
it, and then I call.
Right.
That's
right.
all. I want to hear their voice. I can tell a lot from their voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they okay? Are they healthy? Is everybody all right? All right. That's me.
100%. 100%. All right, we're going to get to another break. We will come back. We'll spend some time filling you in on some of the things happening at the Lexus store of Lexington
Definitely.
In our next segment. And then Jay Pridman coming up right around 9:35 Eastern time. Stay tuned for all that. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Woodbine is now racing 4 days a week, every Wednesday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And racing is back on the turf, as the E.P. Taylor Turf Course, home to the longest stretch in North America, is now available, along with the new 7-furlong inner turf course set to open in mid-June. Premium racing days this month include the Grade 2 Connaught Cup, June 1st, the Woodbine Oaks and Queens Plate Trial, June 8th, and the Queens Plate Festival, June 28th and 29th. Visit woodbine.com today.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget that there is only one website that's the industry's go-to site for racing, breeding, sales, and news, and that's bloodhorse.com. From breaking news to sire lists, results and videos, leading earner lists, and so much more, you'll find it all at bloodhorse.com. A proud recipient of the American Horse Publications First Place Award for publishing media equine-related website. And every issue of the Blood Horse Magazine tablet, well, all of them, are available for download via the App Store or Google Play, even if you're not a subscriber. So make sure you check it all out and go to bloodhorse.com today.
Got to get my Blood Horse every week. It's beautiful. Comes with the mail. Can't beat it.
Yeah, it's outstanding. It's actually my homepage when I log on to the internet. It's the first thing that pops up, and I get all my news right from the Blood Horse.
You get
there.
It right from the Blood Horse. Well, I have it right next to my Bible, the Bible,
and then the Blood Horse. Last week, 1A.
Well, last week I went to church, I brought the Blood Horse. I picked the wrong.
Were you saving that one for the whole show? You were just waiting for me to get to that, weren't you?
No, I just winged that one.
Hey, well, listen, he is the godfather, Tony Attiano, from the Lexus store of Lexington. You hear me talk about him every week with our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment. They have been a sponsor of this program pretty much since I started, shortly after 2003, or right around 2003, actually. And Godfather, the Lexus store is on the corner of New Circle and Liberty, and you have a lot of big things happening out there each and every week.
Yes, we do. We do. We've got a lot of new Lexus brands coming out. There's one, an LC. It's a sports car. It's absolutely dynamic. I was reading some stuff on it the other day about the car. It hadn't arrived yet at the dealership. We have it now. And they were mentioning that Lexus was sending out all the information and the new color of the car. Now, this is a four-seater, but it's truly a two-seater. And the car is sharp as anything. It's not cheap, but it's magnificent. Once you drive it, you know, you fall in love. But it said that the color of the car, now listen to this, was Neapolitan yellow. So I went into work the next day, and I got a bunch of the salespeople, and I said to them, because I had a brochure on the car, so I had a picture of the car. I said, now, guys, I got to tell you something. And gals, the color on this car is Neapolitan yellow. And you are talking to the Neapolitan.
All right, so what is Well, I'm looking at the brochure here that you handed me, and I'm looking at the LC.
Right.
I don't see any yellow in the brochure. So they went with black and silver. In the brochure.
Oh, in the brochure, yeah.
Well, I was looking for the Neapolitan yellow.
It's gorgeous. It really is gorgeous. Really? We have it right in the middle of the showroom. Come in, bring the checkbook, and we'll show it to you immediately.
Do you have to be driving in a desert or through the Rocky Mountains in order to own an LC?
No. Oh, definitely not. You can be driving into New Jersey.
The brochures always crack me up because they have these beautiful pictures of the Lexus, and they are in the middle of a desert or going through a mountain.
Well, we have some very good customer base in the desert industry.
You have a great customer base in the horse industry.
Oh, tremendous.
How many people come in and ask to see the Godfather?
And there's quite a few that come in. And when this first started, and my poor receptionist, she would be calling me. People call me for everything, you know, over there. And it's wonderful. I love the place. And as I said, I'm going on, 22, 23 years now.
Wow.
And she called me and she says, Tony, somebody just came in and they're looking for the Godfather. who's that? I said, it's me, honey. Where is he? And that's when it started. You know, I saw, you got to be kidding me. And people do want to talk about horses. And
yeah.
they do appreciate that we are corporate sponsors of the Lexus Raven Run, which is in October. It's a grade two this year, and it's going 7 furlongs on the dirt for fillies, 3-year-old fillies. So it's a big race, and a lot of nice horses have come out of that race.
And
they really truly have.
If people come out and they're waiting on their car to be serviced or whatever it might be, or they're just going to spend a little time at the Lexus store looking at some of the new vehicles, they can also enjoy the Keeneland shop, which
we
have there.
We have the only Keeneland shop that is not at Keeneland, okay? The gals that run it do a heck of a job. The product, of course, is stronger than death. I mean, everything that Keeneland has. Keeneland, by the way, as an ex-New Yorker, folks, we have people that, when I say we, I'm part of Keeneland, like almost. But we have people that work upstairs, you know, in the restaurant area. And as you start to walk at the door, it's usually a big glass door. These people have hair like mine, or what I still have. It's called gray. And they're nice, wonderful people. They have a nice green sports jacket on, and they're dressed nice, and they're polite. And they have a smile on their face, and they open the door for you. See, every time I go there, I can't believe that I'm in Magic Land. Something. This is Magic Land. Because if that were Belmont or Aqueduct, even Saratoga.
They're not going to hold the door open for you?
Get the heck out of here. Hold the door. Hold it. You get the damn door yourself.
By the way, you're being generous with the gray when you describe your hair color. It's more Bob Baffert white.
Oh, it's white. It is white. Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate that. I'll sort of crawl out of here later.
It looks good on you. You wear it well.
Well, it's, again, Italians have a lot of white hair as they get older. What can I tell you?
Well, look, we'll encourage you to head out to the Lexus store of Lexington. If you are in the area, certainly do that. I tell you every week, I've been telling you for more than a decade that they want to be the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. And, Tony, you've done that as good as anybody.
Well, you know, Lexus is really the top luxury brand in the industry. Every Lexus engine is built to go in excess of 300,000 miles. All of our cars are built in limited production. The colors are just unbelievable. The workmanship. Come in. If you haven't really sat in a Lexus, come in, ask for me or ask for one of the people there. We don't put any pressure. We don't have to put any pressure. We just don't like that. That's not good business. So, you know, you come in, relax, have a cup of coffee or have a nice bottle of water. That's all on the house. Take a look at us, and we have an unbelievable sale going on right now with pre-owned cars. Now, remember when I said Lexus, every Lexus is built to go in excess of 300,000 miles. So if you see a Lexus there and it has like 80,000, 90,000, the car hasn't even been broken in yet.
Yeah.
It's like a brand new car.
I can speak to that. I told you before we came on air that my Lexus now has close to or maybe right around 80,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the day I first sat in it.
Right. No, it's wonderful. The people are great. Our sales staff is tremendous. We have a real nice bunch of people, both men and women. They tell the truth. They stand behind the product. And they're proud to represent Lexus. So come on in and say hello.
By the way, you do have one fan. My mother is tuned in down at her house in Florida, and she says, love the Godfather. Sign him up every week.
Thank you, Mom.
There you go.
I appreciate
that. You're in. You got a fan. All right, we're going to get to another break. We'll come back with Jay Pridman of the Daily Racing Forum. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man is a sire in the making.
Mucho Macho Man! He did it over Will Take Charge!
The number one second crop sire by 2019 stakes winners looks to heat up even more this summer with grade one place Mucho Gusto, now a four-time graded stakes winner and pointing toward the $1 million Haskell Invitational.
Mucho Gusto means business in the Affirm Stakes and he's clear by three.
Cal Cup Oaks winner Mucho Unusual now has earnings over $250,000 and is targeting a return to stakes company at Del Mar.
And this is going to be an authoritative score for Mucho Unusual all the way in the Cal Cup Oaks.
And he's a macho man, a contender for the $1 million Queens Plate at Woodbine June 29th. Plus, recent maiden special winners in Florida and New York by a combined 18 and a quarter lengths. Adina Spring Stallion, Mucho Macho Man. Visit adinastallions.com.
Trap Shot, a graded stakes winner and multiple grade one performer by Tappet. His 10 stakes horses last year included grade two winner and track record setter Hotshot Anna, plus graded stakes performers Untracked and Beautiful Shot. At the sale, his two-year-old sold up to $290,000. This year, he's added stakes winner Six Shooter to his list of recent winners. Trap Shot, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Fans, it's closing weekend at Santa Anita, so don't miss a minute of the fun and excitement with world-class racing and much more each day, beginning with first post time at 1 o'clock. We'll also have great racing on Saturday as the Grade 3 Wilshire for fillies and mares at a mile on turf and the $200,000 Snow Chief for California breds at a mile and one-eighth on grass highlight a 10-race program. Infield, general admission, and parking are free on closing weekend, so bring the family and enter via Gate 6 off of Colorado Place. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Alternation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
From his first two crops, Alternation has produced 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners with more than $4.7 million in earnings. 79% of his runners have won or placed, and Alternation is among the leaders of his crop with average earnings per runner of over $42,000. Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Bricks and Mortar has made his way up into fourth, and he's just two lengths behind, and he's going to come four wide for the stretch drive with Robert Bruce just inside of him. And they're into the stretch, and it is Channel Maker on the outside. Bricks and Mortar runs at him down the center. Bandua tries to hang in there with Corbin toward the inside. And then comes Robert Bruce and Raging Bull, but it's Bricks and Mortar. Bricks and Mortar has taken the lead here. Moving into second is Robert Bruce late. Bricks and Mortar is so good. He wins the Manhattan. Robert Bruce was second. Raging Bull was third. And fourth under the wire was Channel Maker in 158.11.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, the Godfather, Tony Attiano, sitting in for the Pontiff of the Pick Four, who is off this weekend. And we are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the Grade One Manhattan that was contested at Belmont Park just a few weeks ago. Bricks and Mortar, one of the true feel-good stories and a great story here in 2019. He has rattled off 5 consecutive victories. His last 2 wins were in Grade One company, and he is really on a roll. And as you heard the big A, Anthony Stabile, in the first half of the show, maybe a contender for Horse of the Year at this point. Well, Jay Pribman is with the Daily Racing Forum. He's up early on the West Coast to be with us this morning. Jay, appreciate the visit.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing very, very well, my friend. And by the way, want to say thank you before we get started. You took the time to sit in with Bobby Newman to broadcast our races that we did from Pimlico earlier this year. And well done, my friend. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you for including me on the broadcast. It was really a lot of fun. It was thoroughly enjoyable. So thanks so much for that.
Are you in the same camp as Anthony that Bricks and Mortar could be a legitimate contender for Horse of the Year at this point in the season?
Sure. I mean, it's really early, and I think a lot of the polls that you see are sometimes they can be deceiving because you're basing information on just what's gone on to this point, and it's Horse of the Year, not Horse through the end of June. But if he were to continue the run that he's on, he absolutely would be in the running for Horse of the Year. He's already accomplished more than anybody else, certainly on grass. And by my way of looking at things, the only other horse at this point who would be giving him a run for the money would be a horse like Matoli, who has won a couple of grade ones on dirt, including the Met Mile against what I thought was the best field we saw all year in any race in North America. But there's a long way to go, so we'll see how things play out. But, you know, if Bricks and Mortar can continue what he's done the second half of the year, emulating what he did the first half of the year, he absolutely could be in the running for Horse of the Year. He'd be a legitimate contender.
Tony and I have spent time this morning talking about some of the top moments through the first half of 2019, you know, moments that maybe people have forgotten about. And one of those that kind of jumped out to us in the first half of the program, we played the stretch call of Omaha Beach winning the Arkansas Derby. And when you talk about the three-year-old picture right now, there are a lot of people who have kind of, I think, put Omaha Beach on the back burner, probably because he hasn't been seen on the racetrack. But he's a horse that shouldn't be discounted later in the season if he gets back to where he was, right?
It's a complete jump ball, Mike, for the three-year-old male title right now. We had three different winners of the Triple Crown races, plus a disqualified winner of the Kentucky Derby, and the favorite for the Kentucky Derby was scratched 3 days before the race, that being Omaha Beach, who you just referenced. So it's as wide, that division to me is as wide open right now as it was at the beginning of the year. You'd probably give a slight edge if you had to vote now, if racing ended today, you'd probably give a nod to War of Will, I would imagine, or some might go with Maximum Security. But that last loss in the Pegasus for him at Monmouth was certainly an interesting development and made the division even more wide open than it already was. There's so many horses who have kind of stepped to the fore but not carried it through, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens the second half of the year, because races like the Haskell and especially the Travers, which so many of these horses are pointing for, is going to make that really a race that'll go a long way towards deciding the three-year-old title, as will races like the Pennsylvania Derby. And then, of course, if any of these three-year-olds can step up in the fall and beat older horses, that'll really go a long way on their resume towards trying to get an Eclipse Award.
No, that's a great
assessment.
Another
horse who's been forgotten, too, is Game Winner, who I thought ran a terrific race in the Kentucky Derby. He was last year's champion, two-year-old, you know, but he hasn't won this year. He had a couple of narrow defeats in his two preps coming into the Derby, and he's kind of had the reset button hit, but I know he'll be pointing for the Travers, so you could even throw him into the mix as well if he follows in the footsteps of a stablemate like West Coast.
Yeah, I agree with you on Matoli. I think this horse is stronger than death, and I thought your assessment was absolutely on target on this thing. It's wide open, and Omaha Beach, I don't know, you know, what's going on. He's on the West Coast, and he's back in training, though, right?
Yeah, Tony, he is. He's back in training, but obviously not having really done much since prior to the Derby. He had the throat surgery for the entrapped epiglottis. He finally got back to California. It was a little later than they originally had planned, so he's a little bit behind in terms of getting back to the races. But, obviously we know he's a top-class horse when he's right, and I'm sure Dick Mandel will do everything correctly to get him back and in top form.
Well, Mandel is a tremendous, tremendous trainer, and if anybody can do it, I really think he can do it, and I think he deserves a hell of a shot on a big horse finally. But I mean, I think the field is wide open for this year. I'm just looking forward to it. And you're right about Saratoga. I think Saratoga will open up a lot of people's eyes and see what's going to happen up there. You know, that's usually the graveyard of champions up there. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and Game Winner, another horse that Jay brought up just moments ago. Jay, I'm glad you brought up his name, too, because I do think he is another forgotten horse, as you alluded to. What's his plan and his schedule moving forward? Do you know?
So he's back training. He's back breezing. The plan that Baffert used with West Coast a couple of years ago for the second half of the year, which was to start off in a race like the Los Alamitos Derby and use that as a bridge to move on to the Travers, I think is a possibility for him. It looks like he could come around in time to run in that race. That race is only a couple of weeks away at Los Alamitos, because their meet is going to be upon us pretty soon. That brief 10-day meet that they have, 2.5 weeks, that's a bridge leading up to Del Mar. It looks like he could be on target to run there and use that as a way to move forward towards the Travers. So that's what I think the plan is at the moment.
Talking with Jay Pribman of the Daily Racing Forum here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jay, we've been asking listeners to weigh in on our Twitter feed at HRN and let us know what their top moment of 2019 is. And we've received answers that have kind of run the gamut. I said that mine was getting a chance to spend time with Mark Cassie and his wife Tina after they won the Preakness Stakes this year, going to the barn after the race and spending 8 or 10 minutes talking with them. It's a visit that I'm never going to forget. It was just so special for me. We've received people saying that, oh no, it's a, you know, the Kentucky Derby was maybe the moment of the year with Country House. And other people have said, we got one response that said Running to Love You, winning the Charlestown Classic this year, the first West Virginia bred ever to win their most lucrative race. How about for you? Is there a moment or maybe a couple of moments that stand out to you when you think back to the first half of this year so far?
Sure. I mean, obviously the Kentucky Derby was the most significant situation with the disqualification. It was the first time there'd ever been a horse disqualified for an in-race infraction and from victory in the Kentucky Derby. And so that, to me, from a news reporter's standpoint, was the most significant thing. But the couple other things for me that would stand out, I talked earlier about the Met Mile and Mattoli. I just thought watching that race and seeing the quality of that field was really something special between him and McKenzie and Thundersnow. That was just a top-class race. And, you know, I think because of recency bias, one of the best performances of the year that's completely been forgotten by now, unfortunately, is that of City of Light in the Pegasus in the driving rain at Gulfstream back in January. That was as good a race as any horse has run pretty much in the world this year. And it was his final race before he went off to stud as scheduled. But that was a brilliant performance. And even though the conditions that day were atrocious, the quality of the race that he ran, to me, ranks right up there with anything any horse has done all year.
Yeah, City of Light, a horse that was so, so brilliant. And you would have to think that if he stayed in, well, of course, we don't know. That's just speculation to say that he would have continued on. I mean, he could have gone the other way, too. But the way he won that Pegasus, boy, if he had continued on in that fashion, Jay, we'd be talking about him being a slam dunk for Horse of the Year at this point.
Well, it would have been interesting to see him in that Met Mile field, because he would have fit with those kind of horses. That would have been a distance you would love, and he would have made that race, as good as it was, even that much better.
Let me spin it the other way to you, Jay. What are you looking forward to most in the second half of the season?
Well, for me, the summer at Del Mar is great. I don't live very far from there, so that's a home game for me, and I always enjoy the racing at Del Mar, and obviously Saratoga is just a terrific season as well. And then we'll move on into the fall, and I think the Breeders' Cup this year should be a lot of fun. This Horse of the Year discussion that you're having this morning is, I think, representative of just how much there is to look forward to this year, because it's not completely settled. and there's still so much racing to go on this year. So I would say those would be the, for me, the highlights, the Breeders' Cup, and then just the summer racing is just always so much fun between Del Mar and Saratoga.
Jay, quickly, you're out there, you're in California. I think Del Mar would be a natural for the Breeders' Cup. I don't see how they're ever going to get that thing going over in Santa Anita for the Breeders' Cup. What's your assessment on that?
Well, at the moment, that's, you know, the Breeders' Cup is at Santa Anita. I know the Breeders' Cup board is meeting next week, but there's been, I think that would be a question or observation best posed to people at the Breeders' Cup because...
Well, I understand that, right.
They're the ones who are driving that bus.
Yeah, a lot still to be determined there.
God
on that
forbid
front
they
too.
Race there and somebody gets hurt, and I mean, I don't even.
But
want
you
to
could
think
say
about
that about any track, Tony.
Absolutely, but what's happened over there right now? I mean, they've got a situation.
I understand, but as you know, there's been a safety issue at Churchill Downs as well, and if you know, this is not a situation. Obviously, the spotlight has been on Santa Anita,
right?
But the whole sport is under a microscope right now. Mm-hmm. So
great,
you know. We could spend 3 hours on this topic, and if you wanted to flesh it out properly.
Yeah, well said. Wow. He's Jay Pribman of the Daily Racing Forum. And yeah, you could go a lot of different ways with this one, Jay, and you're right. 3 hours might not be enough, but you could really dive into this thing, and we're not going to do it right now. We have to get to a commercial break, but Jay, as always, appreciate the visit here this morning. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we'll make sure you receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and we'll look forward to seeing you up the road, my friend.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Jay.
All right, Jay Pribman, as good as it gets out there on the West Coast with the Daily Racing Forum, does a tremendous job, and yeah, really good on radio, too, sitting in with Bobby Newman for us at Pimlico during the Preakness Stakes. Time now for your monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon here in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, and we'll be back right after that. Stay tuned.
All right, Al, we're at the second stop along the tour here at Four Roses. We're looking at the storyboard, which tells the story from the time that pretty much the grain is incepted. It goes all the way through until it becomes bourbon, right?
That's correct. You know, all of our grain is non-GMO. And that means that people grow it specifically for us, as well as anyone else that's not interested in having anything that's genetically modified. So our corn comes out of the center part of Indiana. Our rye is coming out of Western Europe right now. And our malted barley is coming out of the western part of Canada and the United States. Very important you start with good ingredients. If you don't start with good ingredients, you can't be sure that you're going to have a good product.
Okay.
So after the grain's inspected, we put it into the cooker. And in the cooker, we'll be doing some atmospheric cooking to reduce the starch that's in the grain into a sugar. Then once we mix it with one of our five proprietary yeasts, we can make bourbon.
Okay, gotcha.
From the cooker, it will go into the fermenter. We have two different kinds here that we'll see in a few minutes. One is Red Cypress. The other is stainless steel. And, you know, as Red Cypress begins to decay over time, you have to replace it. And it's an endangered species right now, or probably for a long time.
No kidding.
So we had to replace it with Douglas fir.
Okay.
And then after the fermentation process has been completed, we'll send it through the still, where we'll take the alcohol out of that mixture that was created by the yeast eating that sugar and come out at about 132 proof. Then it goes into a doubler, which is... will look like to you like a giant tea kettle and raise that proof to 140. And then one of the very important aspects of the whole thing is it will all be collected into a tank, and that tank has to be sampled for quality approval. Once it's been approved, it rides in a tank truck down to Cox's Creek, and there it will be put into the barrel after it's been cut to 120 proof. Then it goes into the warehouses, and it stays there until it's ready to be put into one of our different expressions of Four Roses Bourbon. You know, by the way, in addition to Four Roses Bourbon, Four Roses Small Batch, and Single Barrel, we have another one coming out very soon that will be a small batch that will be put out unfiltered. And it will come out at 104 proof, and it will be a mingling of several of our recipes, some of which are kind of new to the market in
terms exciting.
Of being put together. And we're really excited about this brand extension. In fact, this is the first time in about 12 to 13 years that we put out another regular expression of Four Roses that'll be available for some time to come.
Okay, and what's the hopeful launch date for that new product?
We're going to be right here in the spring.
Okay,
it's going to be sometime very, very soon.
Good, good. Well, I can't wait to check it out. When the product goes into the barrels that you mentioned, how long does it stay in the barrels?
Well, actually, it stays in the barrel until the aging process is completed and what's it called for. Usually a minimum of 6 years, could be a little bit less depending on the development of the product. And we think that our whiskey does its best between 6 and 8 years old, but some of them take a little bit longer to age out.
How about the new product? How long will that one take to age out?
That will be anywhere from 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
Very special barrels for that product.
Okay, a lengthy process, and it's all part of what makes Four Roses so special here in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Al, let's move on to the next stop.
Let's go for it.
All right, more to come with Al Young Jr. later in the program. Actually, later next month, you'll hear from him as we take you through that tour. Not later in the program, because we're almost done here this morning. We have one more commercial break to get to. We'll do that right now. We'll come back and wrap it up for you. Stay with us. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Record prize money for horsemen and great racing highlight the 145th Spring Meet at Churchill Downs. Churchill will be offering more than $30 million in total purses, an increase of nearly $8 million over 2018, with $12 million in stakes purses and $18 million in overnight races. Maiden races during the Spring Meet will be worth $85,000, up from $53,000 last year, and allowance purses will range from $87,000 to $94,000. Record prize money and great racing this spring at Churchill Downs.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Wine is made in virtually every country in the world, and I'm ready to give you a tour to find the right one.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with a juicy Pinot Noir.
Now with 2 locations in Lexington. Visit our newest store in Hamburg, off Sir Barton Way. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!
Airdrie Studs Summer Front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, Summer Front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade 1 mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget next Saturday, this show live from Woodbine as we get set for the 160th running of the Queen's Plate. We'll be there with the Equine Forum, and we'll be there later in the afternoon for Eastern is when we kick off our coverage of the Queen's Plate here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That exclusive coverage comes your way on Sirius XM Channel 156 and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. So make that note, a different Sirius XM channel than you're listening to right now. For our race coverage next Saturday afternoon, the Equine Forum will still be right here on Sirius 219 XM 201. And all that coverage next Saturday, presented by TwinSpires.com and by Hillendale Farm. So our thanks to them for making that possible. And our thanks to all of our guests for joining us this morning, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, trainer Josie Carroll, and Jay Privman. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. Godfather, Tony Attiano, sitting in with me this morning. Well done, my friend. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you so much, Ben. You are a true professional, and to see you from the beginning to now, it's absolutely gratifying. So God bless you and your beautiful bride. Love her, too. I mean,
go see The Godfather at the Lexus Store of Lexington. Ciao, that's all baby. I'm going to say. That's my parting shot here this morning. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey, Sean C., handling our social media. For The Godfather, Tony Attiano, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening, and go Steelers.